Yes, may it please the court. My name is Bill Bachman. I represent the appellant. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes, if possible, for a rebuttal. This case involves a pretty straightforward application of Honeycutt versus United States. Honeycutt held that in a criminal proceeding, a defendant can be ordered to forfeit only property that he actually acquires. Neither David Lonich nor James House ever actually acquired Park Lane Villas East, which is the property we're talking about here. The property...
Why don't you address, there's a threshold question of whether your client can even come in and make that argument under N6 and a number of other cases from other circuits. So maybe you want to address that first.
Yes, Your Honor. As a matter of due process, 101 House Co., we contend, has to be allowed to challenge the underlying forfeiture orders here. The Supreme Court in the Park Lane case, which we cite, held that a person can't be deprived of an interest without an opportunity to be heard. The Second Circuit in the Dogerdes case applied that principle in a forfeiture context, very much like this one. 101 House Co. attempted to intervene and participate in the underlying forfeiture proceedings by statute. I think it's 21 USC 853K. It was prohibited from doing so. The district court barred 101 House Co. from participating in the preliminary orders of forfeiture in that proceeding. And so as a matter of due process, it's essential that 101 House Co. be permitted to challenge.
Why does it 853N give you that adequate due process that you could file an ancillary proceeding and assert these very same arguments in that context? Why you're not being denied due process in that sense, are you?
Because 853N does not permit a challenge to the underlying forfeiture order against the criminal defendants. It allows two fairly narrow opportunities for third parties to assert their interests, but it does not permit a challenge to the underlying forfeiture order against the defendants. In this case,
I don't think our court has answered that this question as to whether someone in your client's position can challenge the underlying forfeiture issue. I don't know that it's answered it directly, but it seems that other courts have. And is it your? Are you asking us to disagree with those other circuits? I mean, your position may be those other circuits just got it all wrong, but I want to know your sense of the state of the law here in terms of, you know, are you asking us basically to create a circuit split on this issue?
I don't think you would be creating a circuit split on this issue if you held as a matter of due process, 101 House Co. could challenge the underlying forfeiture. To the contrary, I think that you would create a circuit split if you held otherwise.
Let me turn to this question, because it seems to me that you can show under 853N that you have a superior interest to that of the defendants, correct?
Not exactly, Your Honor.
Well, it's just what it says. Well, it says you can prove that you have a superior interest in the property to the criminal defendants or was a bona fide purchaser for value. I'm reading the language from the statute.
Yes,
so,
but
okay.
There's a part.
Now let me ask the question.
Yes.
Your position is that the defendants never had an interest in the property.
Right.
So then doesn't 853N give you the ability to show that your interest is superior to theirs because they never had an interest?
Here's the problem, Your Honor. And we actually argued in the district court 853N6A, which is the provision you're referring to. The problem is that the interest has to exist before the acts that gave rise to the forfeiture order.
I understand. So the district court finds in the forfeiture proceeding that the defendants have an interest in the property. And your position is you have to be there to argue that they don't then. And you can't wait till later to argue that your interest isn't superior.
Well, no, the problem we have is N6A does not allow us to argue that our interest is superior unless it was superior before the act that gave rise to the forfeiture.
Okay, and you don't have any evidence that before these acts, you had a superior interest in the property.
Exactly. 101 House Co. acquired this property starting in 2010. And the
correct.
Acts,
so
the acts,
that the were, acts occurred before.
Exactly.
So, the acts occurred before. And so why doesn't the district court's finding that the defendants had an interest in the property before you acquired it deprive you of standing?
Well, we have title to the property, so we have standing to challenge the forfeiture. What we have to be able to do is challenge that finding by the district court. If we can't challenge that, then we're in exactly the situation that
part. Well, you have Article III standing, you have claimed injury, but the statute says if you have a superior interest either at the time or through a bona fide purchase, then you can come in and say, no, this property is mine. But it appears you don't have a basis to say that because your client is not arguing that here.
What we argued in 6A at the district court, we lost. We chose not to raise that on appeal. Our argument here is a more fundamental one, which is that neither Mr. Ronick nor Mr. House ever actually acquired this property. And so the forfeiture orders that are the predicate for taking title away from 101 House Co. and giving it to the government, the predicate for that is invalid. And under Park Lane and Dogaritis and Reckmeyer and the Fourth Circuit, we have to be able to challenge that finding in some setting. And we did so in the district court, and the district court allowed us to challenge it. We contend, of course, that the district court got it wrong. But we have to be able to challenge that finding, or we're going to lose our property based on a finding, a ruling that we've never had a chance to challenge.
Who's the we in this case? Housco is an LLC. Who are the, I don't know what the term is in California. Here we would call them the members of the LLC. Who are the members of the LLC?
The members of the LLC are two further LLCs. One is called 114.
Trace them back to real people. Who are the real people with an interest in this?
There are a bunch of them.
Isn't the majority of the interest one of the defendants?
No, absolutely not. And I'm glad Your Honor raised that point because it's crucial here. None of the current investors in 101 House Co.
No, when it was acquired, when the property was acquired, who were the people behind the acquisition?
When the property was first acquired back in 2009 or 10, Matt Gillespie was really the person behind the acquisition. Lonnich was his lawyer and certainly assisted with the acquisition. But Matt Gillespie was the person behind this. Of course, Matt Gillespie was a defendant in the underlying criminal case. He was ultimately, he died. He was never convicted.
Rob, was the court entitled to order a forfeiture of property obtained by Matt Gillespie with proceeds from the conspiracy?
No.
It was not?
No, not in a conviction of Lonnich and House.
It's a conspiracy conviction in which he's charged to be one of the conspirators.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Well, I mean, I'm going back to the forfeiture itself, which I'm not sure you're entitled to challenge, but why couldn't a court in a conspiracy case in which all the defendants who were alive were convicted and in which the charged conduct was that it conspired with a dead defendant forfeit the property that the dead defendant obtained with the proceeds of the conspiracy?
That is exactly the point of Honeycutt, that sort of joint and several liability is not permissible under the forfeiture statutes. That is exactly the point of Honeycutt, and Honeycutt is very clear on that. You can only forfeit from Mr. Lonnich what Mr. Lonnich acquired. You can only forfeit from Mr. House what Mr. House acquired, and neither Lonnich nor House ever acquired Park Lane Villas East. They didn't even acquire membership in 101 House Co. LLC. Neither one of them was ever a member of those corporations. So this is why it's so vital that we be permitted to challenge the underlying mortgage, because Honeycutt makes it as clear as can be that neither house nor Lonnage could face an order of forfeiture for something that they didn't know. I've exceeded my time.
We've made you do it, and I'll give you some time for rebuttal. Before we turn to Mr. Valentini, does anybody have any further questions for Mr. Klein?
No, I don't.
I do not.
Mr. Valentini.
Good afternoon. One of my house has shown no grounds to challenge whether house or loan edge had a forfeitable interest in the property. First, one of one has conceded again today that he has no right to bring the claim that they want to bring, the challenge to forfeitability under the forfeiture statute. And that's for good reason. That's because 101 Housco is a sham entity that was undisputedly created for the sole purpose of perpetrating this fraud, of which Lonage and House were convicted. And it was also undisputedly received any purported interest in the property through that scheme. So 101 Housco obviously cannot and does not try to fit its claim under 853 and 6. Because it cannot show that he had a superior interest in the property that pre-existed the fraud. And it cannot show that it was a bona fide purchaser for value of the property after the fraud. 101 Housco resorts entirely to due process, but its arguments fail for essentially the same reasons why its statutory arguments don't work. And due process still requires the defendant in this case is to show a protectable interest in the property at issue. But precisely because 101 Housco undisputedly received the property, its interest in the property as the proceeds of the fraud of which Lonage and House were convicted, under the relation back doctrine, that interest automatically vested in the government at the moment the property became a proceed of the offense. Any interest.
Mr. Valentini, let me ask you a question that troubles me a little bit. What was the interest in the convicted defendants in the property? In other words, their interest, I assume what was forfeited was their interest in the property, right?
Right.
What was their interest in the property?
Well, there may have been alienations and sort of transfers of the property since they originally received the property, but the relevant time here is the time when they lost their interest because it was vested in the government. And at that time, Lonage got the right to possess, to control the property, which is a right recognized under California law. And House received formal paper title to the property. That was, of course, that decoupling of the bundle of property sticks was precisely how straw frauds work. And that was precisely the point.
This may be where Judge Hurwitz was sort of going with this, but I mean, there does seem to be some tension between this argument and essentially the trial theory that House was just a sham buyer and that, Lonage was really just a front for Medjlessi.
So the district court that presided over the long trials we discussed in the previous case tackled this argument and addressed this argument directly, and they found no tension between what we argued in the theory of conviction and the forfeiture theory in this case. And that's because in the district court, the government did not prosecute House for not having legal title to the property. That was the whole point of the scheme, was to get legal formal paper title to James House through Housco. The crux of a straw ownership in this case was to misrepresent who in fact controlled 101 Housco. That was the crux of the prosecution. It's not that 101 Housco did not in fact have legal paper title. That's how they did the fraud. That's why the fraud worked initially until it was discovered. So there was no tension between the two propositions. Otherwise, if there were tension between the two, no instance in which a fraudster is convicted for a straw ownership could result in forfeiture, which is a systemic problem.
I appreciate these points. I guess the question I have is, if we even got to this, right? I mean, to even get to this, we have to conclude that 101 Housco essentially has a statutory standing to make this argument, but let's assume for a second we get there. Is it your view that when it comes to doing this kind of analysis under the forfeiture provisions, we really don't look at all at sort of the trial theory or anything else? It's really just more of a legal question as to whether the defendants own the property. And here we can tell that House did in fact own it, at least on paper, and Lonich owned it in the way that he controlled it. And if those tests are met, that can be forfeited regardless of what the theory was in trial.
Right. On the face of the statute, that is correct. I mean, we are not taking the position that principle of judicial estoppel, if we were to actually take inconsistent position, could not in some case, some hypothetical case, prevent us from making arguments. Those are sort of principle that the courts apply generally not on a statutory basis. So to the extent that those may still have applicability, but again, there really is no tension between the two positions. And yes, the inquiry is, and I think this court's decision in Navas, it basically looks to whether under in 853 proceedings, the court really looks whether there is an interest that a pre-existing superior interest that would be recognized under state law. In this case, 101 House Code undisputedly did not, because I believe my opposing counsel was not denying, and I think he acknowledged in the district court that 101 House Code got title to the property through the scheme. And so under those principles apply fully and dispose of the attempt to circumvent the statutory scheme in this case.
Can you speak for a minute about just the 853I remedy for innocent investors and how they can take advantage of that, and what factually you know about whether any of them have done so here?
So like that, there's a provision under 853I that allows the Attorney General to grant on a discretionary basis remission or mitigation to innocent investors or innocent parties who may not otherwise find redress or for their property interest under 853N6. In this case, and this is something that my opponent has raised more as an equitable matter, I think has pointed to some investors that he claims, and perhaps there may be some after the fact late coming investors that, you know, may not have known of the full extent of the fraud, or may not have known of the fraud. But again, this is the only party of record that my opponent is representing here, and who is a party in this case and who has standing to participate in this case, is 101 House Co. And the reason why 101 House Co cannot obtain redress is because it doesn't fit any of the statutory vehicles for third party to obtain redress. And it's somewhat ironic that after having criticized the government for not taking seriously, not sort of giving full effect to the formal corporate formalities of 101 House Co. because it was a sham entity, then 101 House Co. attempts, at least as an equitable matter, to look directly to the investors as if standing did not have a serious grounding in the law. And the fact that if there were investors, those could bring separate actions, those could seek relief under 853I. We don't think.
But could those people also have, they're not here, but could they have also pursued relief with the district court under N6, where they come in and say, listen, I bought an interest in this LLC. I thought it was legitimate. Here's the evidence I have for that. I'm a bona fide purchaser, and I should not have my interest in this LLC forfeited. Can someone like that come into the criminal case, or do they have to go through 853I?
So generally speaking, they will have to be able to reverse pierce the corporate veil in order to bring back claim, because the assets of the entity, that the assets belong to the entities, not to the individual owners or members of the entities. So they will have to sort of reverse pierce the corporate veil. There's been no attempt to do that in this case. We don't know. I don't think this court has decided whether that theory would allow them to come in under 853N6. To the extent that would have been an option. That's not an option that they've taken advantage of. Unless your honors have any questions about the merits of my opponent's claims. Unless your honors have any questions about the merits of my of 101 House Co. claims, we would ask the court to affirm the dismissal of the third party petitions below.
I think Judge Hurwitz is on mute, but I do not.
Yeah, good. I was speaking over Mr. Valentini anyway, so it's good that I was on mute. Mr. Klein, I'm going to put a minute back on the clock for you, your rebuttal.
Thank you.
Now you're muted.
The investors, Judge Bress, almost certainly did not have standing because they don't have an interest in Park Lane Villas East. Okay. They had, so they could not have come in. Remission is not an adequate remedy for them. Dogaritis so held, and the remission that the government is prepared to offer in this case is inadequate. Basically, it's returning their investment minus gains. So most of them would probably get virtually nothing. In terms of the due process issue, Judge Brest, you asked if you'd be creating a circuit split. And I just want to make clear, if the court were to hold that there is no due process right here, I believe that would create a circuit split with the Second Circuit in Dogaritis and the Fourth Circuit in Reckmeyer. I don't know of a case.
I don't know that anyone's saying there's not a right. The question is there sufficient process through N6 and 853I and otherwise.
And that's what Dogaritis addresses directly and holds that there is not. And I on the other side of your question, Judge Bress, I don't know of a case that has rejected the Dogaritis due process analysis. So I don't believe you'd be creating any sort of circuit split if you went with Dogaritis. Judge Hurwitz, may I make one final point? You're muted.
You may.
Thank you. I just wanted to say on the question of House's straw ownership, this court held in a case called U.S. versus Vacant Land, 15F3rd 128, that straw ownership is not even enough to give standing to contest a forfeiture. It's certainly not an interest sufficient to deprive a title holder of property that the title holder owns. Vacant Land is 15F3rd 128. Thank you.
Thank you, and this case will be submitted. Mr. Valentini, you're free at last.
Thank you.